Welcome to Job Tales, the podcast where you find dozens of interviews and learn about your potential favorite job. Lawrence Mann has spent many years working with animals, in film sets and at the zoo. Fascinating story of an animal lover. Enjoy the show. Lawrence, thank you very much. We're actually in LA, which is awesome. And I am very grateful for your the short notice that I gave you about this podcast. So very nice to meet you. And I would love to hear from you what you do with animals in your professional life.
In my professional life, I have done many, many different things. I started just walking dogs, studying about animals, and then I went on to get a degree, and I worked as an animal trainer and an animal keeper at the Los Angeles Zoo and Botanical Gardens. I did that for 10 years, and with that knowledge, I took that to the set in the entertainment industry. And when you ever hear no animal was harmed in the making of a movie, a commercial, a music video, television show, whatever, I'm one of those specialists that did that. Okay. And people that work with animals are working with animals because they work better with animals than they do with people. But when you do that job where you have to work and monitor the safety of animals on set, you have to work with production. And there's very few people that have that finesse that can work with the industry as well as understand what the animals need and what is, you know, warning signs. And I was one of those few people that was able to do this. I work 7 days a week.
Wow. Can you tell me just in a nutshell what this finesse consists of for those who have never been on a film set or in a film production?
Well, a director is a creative person and they have an image. They know what they want and I'm not going to say they don't care how they get it, but they do want it to get that shot no matter what. And sometimes the animals aren't capable of that. So instead of just saying, no, this is not going to happen, I come up with plan A, B, and C. We can't do that, but we can do this. And directors seem to like to work with me and requested me because I didn't tell them no. I told them, let's try this instead. So that's the finesse.
Okay, that's great. And I guess it was appreciated when you were doing this this work?
Oh, yeah. There was millions of dollars on the line. And if I stopped a production from working that day or that week, and I had to do that a couple of times, it's not fun. And it costs a lot of people a lot of money and a lot of time. So you get to be favored around there because you're the guy that can come up with solutions
and not problems, right?
I'm a problem solver, and I don't like to ruffle feathers, pun intended.
Okay. I would like to come back to the film production, but I first would like to step back in time and then talk about your education before you started with animals.
Okay, I went to UCLA. I did economics with a minor in accounting, and I started on a film production company as an accountant doing accounts payable and receivable. And I just didn't want to follow in my dad's steps. He was a CPA. So I got out of the business world, portion of the business world. And I started working actually running nightclubs and booking bands. I was a club promoter for 20 years, booking bands like Nirvana and Beck and Garbage and Hole. A lot of bands from the 80s and 90s and early 2000s.
Okay. So that was something also completely different than what then you started to do with animals. So what brought you from being a club promoter to working with animals?
I went on a tour on a Thanksgiving morning to a place here in Los Angeles called Soul of the Wolf. It's no longer there. And I took a tour. The lady said, you're really good with animals. And she said, do you want to volunteer here? I took the volunteer position. It turned into a paying position. The woman asked me if I could help with bottle feeding the wolves. And she said, do you want to take one home and raise it for a few months? And I took it home and I actually loved it so much that I went through a very, very extensive process and very tough process, as it should be, to get a permit to keep the wolf permanently. So I kept the wolf and had him for 12 years and got more animals along the way. The more I studied, the more I wanted to acquire. And I had my own little zoo for a while here in Silver Lake, California before I got legit and started working with the Los Angeles Zoo.
Okay, that's very original story. So I guess this woman who offered you the volunteer job has really changed your life for the last couple of decades, right?
100%. Yes.
100%. And this is the beauty of life as well, that you don't know where your path, you know, where your path is leading you. And so, yeah, I find it very, very inspiring. So do you think that, or, you know, based on your experience, that your education, although it was in a different field, did it help in your work with animals?
I think that my education always goes back, because it's such a general, economics and accounting is something you can always use. So I was 1099'd on a lot of projects, and I knew how to handle my finances very well. So I think even within my later life, from doing real estate to doing payroll accounting, I think that getting an education, and especially something that's diverse like economics, was time. My parents were very correct in sending me there, and it was time very well spent.
Okay. Also, because parents want the best for you, and so they try to do their best and make some decisions for us, you know, on our behalf, or because they want us to be happy. And so it can be quite challenging at times between what parents want and what kids want.
It was instilled in me that there wasn't an option, that you were going to college, you were going to go to a good college, and I didn't think there was an option. And by the time I graduated and I started looking for jobs, doors opened a lot easier. And I was very thankful that they were, I won't say they pushed me, but they gave me a nudge, and I followed through.
Okay. So that's what was the initial part of your life. And when you started with animals, you mentioned that there was some tough parts and chapters, because you had to, you had to train yourself and you had to learn about animal behavior. And did you do further education, or was it self-education?
I still to this day never stop studying behavior. Okay. And animal classifications. I even study the Latin names to learn about them. I'm always, and I'm going back to even prehistoric times. It's something that I loved as a child, learning about dinosaurs all the way up. And I started with dinosaurs, then I learned about reptiles, and then I joined a herpetology association, got a snake as my first animal, and worked my way up and had my own little, like I said, a zoo.
At home.
I had wolves, a cougar, a skunk, a hawk. I had bats. I had a cobra. I had a lot of things you shouldn't have.
You shouldn't have. So I was going to ask, like, was it allowed to have animals?
Oh, no. Hawaii and California are notorious for being the toughest on that, as they should be, because too many people get pets that shouldn't. I was very highly educated and in what their needs were. And I also had the money and to build the proper enclosures for these animals. Mm-hmm. But it's still not a good thing. So I came out of it helping these animals more than having them as pets. I kept them. I learned to be an advocate as, don't do this. Don't do what I did, please.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah.
Is that what you said about becoming legit?
I got a permit to have a wolf, serval, which is like the poor man's cheetah. It's like an exotic spotted cat. Your viewers, listeners out there can do a little search on that. It's a gorgeous mm-hmm. cat. And I had a fennec fox. The wolf, I used to do educational programs, and the wolf is the largest wild dog, wild in the canine family. And the fennec fox is from Africa, and it's the smallest. And mm-hmm. so I used to do, comparisons, and the kids loved it, from the smallest to the largest, bringing these two animals out. But everything else I had to bring to a sanctuary, which helped me get my job at the Los Angeles Zoo, because I worked at a sanctuary for many years before I got into the zoo.
Into the zoo, okay.
Yeah.
So that was your next phase to ask for. Did you just go to the zoo and ask for a job, or it was, through your work with the sanctuary?
I wanted to work there for a while, and it's a really, really hard position, because there's only one zoo in Los Angeles anywhere near. So when I applied for the position as a full-time keeper, there were 5 positions and 248 applicants. So I felt very, very special that I was picked. And yeah, it's a very coveted job, and it might not pay a lot, but the benefits of working in such a beautiful surrounding with such beautiful animals, not too many people get to say they did that. And that was like a childhood thing. I wanted to be an animal keeper.
That was a childhood dream. Okay. Yeah, so you always loved animals.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's awesome. And what did your job consist of at the animal zoo?
At the LA Zoo, it's cleaning is probably the biggest portion of your day, what you spend doing. But then you have to prepare diets. You have to do, we don't have any animal, even the smallest on the food chain. We have what's called behavioral enrichment, meaning you have to do something to make them think. So if I put took some urine from or poop from a cougar and put it in the wolf's, they loved it and they wanted to know where the smell came from. If I had monkeys, I would put mealworms inside a box with a whole bunch of shredded paper so they have to find it. With warthogs, you bury beetles and let them root them up. You have to do something that engages their mind so they're not sitting in a cage, because it's just cruel to be in an enclosure for 24 hours and not being utilizing your mind. So that's something that the LA Zoo got really right, and they enforced us to do that, and it made us be more creative, and we came up with all kinds of stuff, smearing peanut butter all over, just all kinds of different little things that make them happy.
That make them happy, okay. Thinking about zoos, of course, there's the ethical question that comes up as to whether zoos are fair for animals that live there. What is your opinion about that?
I was going back and forth struggle with this before I started working at the zoo, and I became a vegetarian for ethical reasons, not health reasons. I haven't had any meat since 1981, and I was very apprehensive at first, but then when I started working there, I realized through my studies that animals in the wild, animals specifically, they will not eat unless they're content. And they don't thrive, they wither away unless they're content. Animals will not reproduce unless they're happy and they feel safe. And our animals at the zoo were reproducing like crazy. I still have a problem with two things in captivity. One is marine animal, and the other is birds of flight. If you have a hawk or an eagle or a condor, they need room to fly. And if you have I just don't see a large enough thing for a whale or a killer whale or even a sea lion. It's just to me, it's just not the right place. That's something that people should have to go to their place to see, and the zoos shouldn't have. But that's my own thoughts. Some of my animal keeper buddies will argue with me on that, but that's mine.
Okay. All right. What will they say?
They'll say that they're probably going to go along the lines that they're happy and all that, what was that movie? There was something about I forgot what it's called. I'm sorry. But there was a movie about the marine mammals in captivity, and it showed the bad side. And there is some bad side to it, but they said that they're only showing the bad stuff, that they're cutting away to all the benefits they do. And they are, one of the major things of a zoo is, at least it should be, is educating the public. If you don't see an animal, you're not going to want to protect it. If you actually get the chance to interact with the animal, like when I was doing educational stuff and I was teaching kids, if you actually get the chance to touch an animal, you feel so much more connected and you want to help. You want to help them persevere. And that's what I aspire to. I never get tired of talking to kids about animals.
Okay, awesome. And, you know, thinking about kids, what options do kids have today, you know, when they start studying and they want to study about animals and they want to work with animals? What are the educational options they get, and what kind of courses they can follow?
It, depending on the age, I mean, there's stuff you can do online. There's stuff you can do that you can volunteer. You can help at any local sanctuary. They always need help. Even if you're young, they will take you on to do something. And every time you're around that atmosphere and you're interacting with these people that have years of knowledge, you're learning something. And I highly recommend to go search out the mom and pop littler sanctuaries. The big ones, like we have one here called Wildlife Way Station, they don't need the help as much. They have tons of people and tons of income coming through. It's the little ones that need the help, and you'll get a lot more knowledge. And it's great for kids. And even working at the bigger zoos, I mean, you can take all kinds of outside classes. There's always something to learn. And the books they have now, they're not the same as when I was little. You can get like zoological class books. And I have a huge volume of them at home. And it's just, if you're really interested in it, you need to know everything. And I studied an animal inside and out before I obtained one or worked with it in the zoo. So it's okay. There's a lot of outlets.
What do you find was the hardest part for you in learning how to treat animals and deal with animals?
In a zoo setting, the hardest is they don't believe in, you know, if they don't have a good quality of life, they have to euthanize. And that's something the curators, you know, that's their judgment call between them and the vets. And when you're working with an animal that you've worked with for years and then it has to be euthanized because it's not doing as well, it's hard. It's just hard losing one of your buddies. And working on set, it was a different type of, basically in the industry, there's these classifications of the animals, and up at the very top echelon is the stuff people fear and they're in awe of, the tigers, the bears, the big stuff. Then you have your dogs and cats and bunnies and stuff, the cute stuff. And then you have your birds and stuff. Then you have reptiles. Then you have insects. But way down at the bottom, for some reason, I don't know what it is, but they're the beast of burdens. And they're your chickens, your pigs, your horses, your cows, goats. They, for some reason, because they're not usually handled by a trainer, they're handled by an animal handler. And I had to be much more diligent in my job. I've shut down more productions with horses and birds than I had with anything else, because it was really hard seeing that they just looked at them as working animals and not like as loving living creatures.
Yeah. Going back now to the film production, what brought you there? Like, what was your first opportunity there? How did you get it?
I've always been part of the entertainment industry. I had one uncle that was vice president of television at 20th Century Fox. I had another uncle that was a character actor in the 40s, and he became very famous for his character on Bewitched, Abner Kravitz. His name was George Tobias. So he introduced me to lots of other actors. So I grew up with character actors around me, from the Dead End Kids to Tarzan, Johnny Weissmuller, to one of the Three Stooges, Larry Fine. He opened the door to a lot. So I was exposed to that very early on.
Okay. What does a day look like when you are on a film set, or also like previously, you know, prior from shooting? What do you need to take care of when you deal with animals?
If I'm monitoring and I'm not like involved with actually helping them bring the animals to set, it's basically I show up, I say hi to production first, fill out my paperwork, my tax stuff, and then I go and I hang out with the animal trainers. And I pretty much, a lot of monitors might just say, hey, I'm here, and then go start their report. And you have to fill out a report every day and go off on their own. I ingratiated myself and I became friends with all these people. I'm still friends with them to this day, and I haven't been on set for a while. And you get to learn about those individual animals, because I know a lot. I know more than most people about wolves, but I don't know about that wolf that's working that day. And when I was working on True Blood, there was lots of wolves. So I stayed and I wanted to learn what made these animals tick. Some animals, they're oblivious to all the lights and noise that go around. Some are highly sensitive. And I have to do a little speech before production to tell the crew, listen, these animals are not very comfortable around loud sounds. Keep it to a minimum. Try to keep your crew to a minimum. If you don't have to be on set, please go away and let us just do the filming. You can come back. You can talk to the trainers if you want to see them later. But while we're working, distractions are a no-no. And that was my day-to-day, is just like making sure that the animals were safe, making sure that when they were kept, when they're sitting there hours and hours, because when you're working, the actors, and especially children actors, go first. The animals always seem to go last. and they have us come right at the call time, meaning your start of the day. So we would mm-hmm. get there early in the morning, and we might not shoot until the evening. Or we'll get there in the evening, and we go through the whole night, because there's a lot of overnighters, and you'll, especially on stuff like True Blood, where there's vampires, you shoot mm-hmm. through the night. So sometimes you won't get called until like 4 in the morning. I have to make sure that the animals are comfortable. They're not hot. They're not cold. They're getting water. They're getting fed. They're in a quiet place. There's just a lot of things, and you have to be very in tune with what the animal is feeling, or you're not doing your job.
Yeah. In hindsight, have you learned one lesson or two that you could apply if you were to start all over? Would you do something different?
Yeah, I would not have acquired as many animals as I did, because it was exhausting. I was working, running a nightclub, and that was all day. And then I got home, and I had to work for another 8 to 9 hours taking care of them, because I didn't believe in just having an animal. Everything in my house, from bats to snakes to an alligator to skunks, they all had their out time. So I let everything out. They had their roaming around. I did the whole behavioral enrichment myself at home. And it was exhausting, but it wasn't fair to the animals, because in the end, I was doing something illegal. To this day, I wish I didn't acquire a lot of the animals. I mean, certain ones I really learned a lot from, and they got a great life, like the wolves and the cougar and some of the other animals like the skunk and the hawk. But others, I don't think it was fair to them. And I know that I'm not the only one out there that did it. In fact, there are more tigers in people's backyards in the United States than there are in the wild. And that's how bad this is. So that's how I kind of try to learn to like preach that. And hopefully people will learn that don't go on a whim. Don't try to be macho. It's not worth it. It's not the animals suffer the most, but it's not good for you too if you get attached to these animals and then they're yanked away.
I see. Now you do something completely else. What took you to change? What was it?
Well, I still have my wild animal permit, so I still take care of 2 wolf hybrids every morning. And okay. They were rescues, so I did not acquire them. They came to me. And I am a real estate agent with Keller Williams and Los Feliz, and I love what I do. And I still, Artisheer turned me on to a mutual friend of ours, turned me on to a Netflix show called Chimp Kingdom Chimp Empire, I'm sorry. And it's an amazing story, and it's a learning experience as well. So I continue to learn every day.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your very honest account of your life and your profession. Very inspiring. And I wish you all the best for your next jobs and the next couple of decades.
I appreciate that. I hope I'm still doing real estate. But I had an uncle that told me when I was young, you don't know where you're going to go in life. You don't know what you're going to be doing in the next 5 years even. And man, was he right.
I hear you. I completely agree with you. That's why I do this podcast.
That's awesome.
Is to help others and to show that, yeah, changing path every 2 years or every 5 or not changing at all, it's all good as long as, you know, you learn from life and then you try to be happy.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Thank you, Lara. Bye-bye.
Keep listening to my podcast. All comments are welcome. Reach out to my social media. You'll find Job Tales Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Bye.